Welcome to Uniquely Loved, a celebration of authenticity and divine inspiration. We are encouraged to be our own unique, authentic selves. Join me, Tech Witch Nikki, as we discuss spiritual gifts and skills we can develop and enhance, speak with amazing people using their skills in a variety of ways, and explore the different ways to connect to the wonders of the universe. Hello, my loves. I have a special treat for you today. I would like to introduce Joanna Padilla. Now, Joanna is a clinical therapist, an energy and divination practitioner, an intuitive educator who encompasses all aspects of her training, her lived experiences, and her gifts for a comprehensive approach to healing. Joanna, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Nikki. I'm so excited.
I am too. Oh my gosh. And you bring in the holistic, the spiritual, the woo-woo, along with the clinical, smarty pants mindset, you know, the scientific and the holistic. And it's really, really cool. I love how you're blending everything together.
Yes, thank you. I learned just on my own two individual paths that there's a lot of crossover in terms of intuition work, whether they're clinical interventions or they're woo-woo related things, intuition, divination work. It's all about coming back to the unconditioned self and releasing any kind of ego operating system.
And you mentioned crossover already. I know you wanted to discuss your experiences with people making the transition into the afterlife and, you know, what you've experienced to help people through.
Yeah, so typically when somebody is they cross over, I know that even people who are within the spiritual realm, there's a lot of it's a little bit harder to make those connections because we're emotionally charged. And so with the crossover period, I have experience in kind of sitting with people and folks within that realm, helping them kind of just de-escalate, get those things out, but also being able to be a catalyst for that message communication and just kind of clear things out so that it neutralizes things and that the party can cross over, do what they need to do as they go on to visit others on the human plane for their own healing and then their own journey as well.
That's amazing. And the fact that you can, you know, utilize all of your gifts to help de-escalate the emotional response and help people heal through their grief. And can you tell us a little bit about some of the mediumship experiences that you've had?
Yeah. So they range. Everything is, I mean, I can prepare and do all the things and make myself just as prepared as possible, but they range so often. And I think one of the ones that sticks with me is it took a couple of days. I think that it was a tragic end to life, an unexpected end to life. And, you know, with those things, when we're on the human plane, it's very complicated and convoluted for us in itself to sit with, to understand, to wrap our head around, and then the stages of grief. But this individual who had passed over was confused. They didn't know what had happened. They were kind of in this like confused state, like, well, what's going on? I'm noticing things, but it just was unclear. So it was a pretty intense one that I can recall, and just kind of sitting with there and translating a lot of things. And something that can happen often when we're channeling is sometimes a sitter may not be ready or can be a little closed off and whatnot, and so that kind of makes things a little bit harder, and I get it. But when you're working with multiple people, especially, I think it can make things easier because you get different things from different people. But it's almost as if there's the more hands in the cookie jar, the more complicated things can be a little bit. But that took about maybe 3-4 days. But then we kind of had some segue, and yeah, we had some movement. There was a lot of emotional release, and you can hear people just kind of saying, I felt that person, their spirit just kind of release a little bit, you know, they know it's okay. And then, you know, we do some healing on our end and wish them well and do some candle work to kind of also a white candle to support both parties in that healing process.
And you've been able to explain to somebody who's come to you and it's like, hey, I'm feeling all of this. And you've been able to help them make sense of something that a lot of people would just view as, psh, you're just making this up. That's just your imagination. When no, energy is real.
Yes, it's real. It comes in all forms, right? And you can be something that's, I don't want to say as small as, but something like synchronicity, right? Oh, the coincidences I've been seeing, you know, 2-2-2 for the last month and a half, is that's just a little odd, right? If we look on the grand scheme of the probability of coincidence for things to happen so often as a coincidence, I think that there's a bigger, for sure, there's a bigger theory behind that.
Are there any other experiences you would like to discuss with the transition period or helping anybody on the other side?
Yeah. So sometimes I think something that happens is if I'm in a circle and we're in a healing circle or somebody comes through, or even when I'm out, sometimes I'll just kind of get, it's like a little tap, like, you know, maybe if I'm in an Uber and it's like, oh, you know, I'm so-and-so or ask them so-and-so. And so it's pretty interesting the way, you know, spirit or even just crossing over works, right? Sometimes I can kind of just feel the energy in the space, like, oh, something is unresolved here. There's some, whether it's emotional, human emotional residual energy, or somebody who's crossed over and there's some stuff just kind of lingering. So I guess that's a long-winded answer to say that it is a lot of input, and being able to sift through that is for sure hard. It's a delicate dance with somebody saying, I'm ready to sit with this process and help this person or connect with this person, and then in actuality that happening. But that's human nature. We want to make sense of things even when it's hard to believe, right? So yeah, I get tons of input throughout the day. Luckily for me, I work from home, and I think that that helps preserve my own energy and a little bit of my sanity, probably, if I'm not doing my own self-care and staying hydrated. My guides, you know, yell at me and remind me and poke me, but I enjoy it. I enjoy it. It's something different all the time. I enjoy sitting and kind of helping both parties just sit with stuff, just like an intimate process, and holding space for that, and just reaffirming, right? It's not, you know, that death is scary or can be scary. And of course we miss people who've crossed over, and that's natural for that to happen. But really the energy is always here, right? They are always with us. And a lot of times, especially during the grieving processes, they'll make little reminders, right? Maybe you're in a car or on public transportation. Maybe it's something random. You see, there's nothing that happens by randomness. If something is out of sort, it's for sure some kind of connection.
I know so many people like to write it off as just coincidence. And my guides have been harping on me. It's like, no, there's no such thing as coincidence. Come on.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, if you notice it, you were meant to.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, kind of on the topic of crossing over and just channeling, or I guess anything, it could even be trauma related, mental health related, right? I think sometimes that happens if somebody crosses over, we've experienced some sort of trauma, which it can be there's something that has happened to us or something that didn't happen for us. Sometimes there seems to be this kind of like, oh, well, that happened to me for a reason. I'm able to do this. Absolutely not. Trauma does not happen to you for a reason. People walking on the walking plane have their own free will and their own journey, and that's totally about them and their own journey. And so I like to just kind of share that, that even people like who take their own life or die tragically, or just any functions, you know, sitting back and considering a little bit like, oh, okay, that person had their own free will, and that's what they chose to do about it, and it's not about me.
Yeah, that can be really, really hard to even process, because we humans internalize so much already anyways. And
yes,
because anything we feel deeply, it has to be within us, right? It has to be happening to us or something. So we still want to find a reason or a rationale to make sense of it.
Yes. Yeah. And then it kind of gets a little bit muddy when we're talking about accountability, because like you said, we want to make sense of it. We want to know, we want to understand it. And so if we can take accountability to some degree, that's okay, fair. But not when we're taking the whole, all of the weight, right? There's some things that are not ours to carry. But as gentle souls and the grace that we can offer other people in taking that weight, we kind of, some of the work is doing that for ourselves, giving ourselves the grace, the unconditional positive regard, the gentleness, because we're doing the best that we can. And none of us have the book of life.
And I don't know if a lot of us just kind of take it on as guilt, like, oh, if I could have done something or said something different, maybe, ooh, tons of feels going on right now. Maybe they wouldn't have left at a specific time and got hit by a car or something. Ooh, okay. But that's definitely not on us, and it never has been. And I know that can be very, very difficult for somebody to actually let go of or put down, because we want to think we have more control than, we do, because we have a lot of control for our own reality. But when it's, major tower moments, it's just like, oh gosh.
And I appreciate you kind of speaking to some vulnerability and the emotions coming up. And I for sure felt that buzz in my own heart chakra, like, oh, okay, I feel some of this coming up. But you're exactly right. When there are major tower moments, again, we want to reflect, like, okay, what can I do, or what can, what is this more, what is this about? Tell me some more. But again, when people are on their own journey and their own free will, the only thing we really have control of is ourselves. We can share, we can talk, we can plead, we can, all the things. But that's our own free will. And then how that crosses over to somebody else, timing and whatnot, where they're at on their own journey, it for sure muddies it. And guilt is a natural process of the grieving process. It's, denial, guilt. And I think one of the misconceptions is, and the discomforts, it's not comfortable, it's uncomfortable. It's, hey, when are we going to be done with this? Is that it's not linear and it doesn't necessarily ever go away. And it's a process that we take on with us, and kind of processing, putting things down that are not ours, letting go, with also knowing that we don't have to let said person go. We can carry them with us very much so, but the guilt, right? And speaking of that, that's kind of a, that can become a block, in receiving, intervention and receiving, little validations from them, because that's our ego, right? That's our ego. That's an emotional piece that we're holding on to. It serves a purpose, but that's it. Serving a purpose is not about our authentic alignment. That's about the human experience.
And I know all the emotions and everything can actually block us from even getting the intuitive hits of saying, hey, I'm here to comfort you. I'm watching over you. I'm part of your team.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. More feels. But, you want to dispel a specific misconception with that as well, about our grief and the guilt or anything, us trying to hold tight.
And I think that kind of comes back to the control, right? Or the illusion of control. Because we can quote unquote do everything right, whatever that means. But we have free will, right? If I decide to go down the street and just get an ice cream on the whim, that's still my free will. And so on the way there, I can cross people, I can, meet people, I can, all these other interactions, this domino effect of things. And I think, you mentioned tower moments a little while ago. And so even in regard to tarot, sometimes, I bring that into my work as well. And I think oftentimes people are like, well, what does this say about my future? Well, what I can do is tell you what the outcome looks like if you're on this track. But again, free will can shift that energy for sure. So it's almost, it's not like a guarantee, because if you're saying, hey, I'm going for this degree, and I say, yeah, you're on the track to graduate, and you stop doing your homework out of your own free will, well, that end result might not be what we initially discussed, because free will intervention.
Oh, definitely. Oh, and of course, so many people, I don't know, I'm always hearing, oh, destiny this and destiny that, with, pop culture, lore, books, and everything else. And it's like, it's not written in stone. Just because you grew up a certain way or you felt destined for something, you can change your mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, makes me curious. it makes me curious about, folks that do say that, well, destiny this, destiny that. Well, what does that mean? What is the underlining? Is it kind of like, well, I didn't have control of my childhood or my upbringing? Fair, like none of us did. But at some point, if we want to change the pattern, we have the internet at our hands, right? We can look up resources, we can look up X amount, XYZ support that we may need to disrupt that. So, okay, like if destiny is there has to be some action from the person in of itself that partakes for it to for the math to math. So I'm curious about, I just feel like it's such a umbrella term that I'd be curious about the conceptualization and how that what that means subjectively to the people that are using that word.
Yeah, more often than not, I see it being used as, something individual to them because it's, I don't know, I think it all comes back to programming, what we're conditioned to believe and do and all that.
Yeah, the ego, right? And you bring up a really good point. So even given the example, if it's coming down to their programming or their own benefit, is it confirmation bias? Are we purposefully ignoring something that maybe we're not, that's too uncomfortable to unpack, right? Or whatever the case may be, it functions, even the word maladaptive in clinical term, right? Is it really maladaptive? Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure because it's adaptive. It works. The function will work until it doesn't work, right? Whatever has been your template historically, whatever has been the answer to solving historically will eventually become the problem because those tools stop working. If I've grown up with a hammer, and I mean, I can do some things around the house with a hammer, right? And if I'm taking the hammer with me, okay, fair. If I'm out on the road and I have a flat tire, my hammer is not really going to do much to change the tire. It will probably cause more damage, but I use that example as a limit of the skills that we have. So the more skills we can acquire to manage, whether it's emotion regulation, introspection, being mindful, being present, even intuitive work, then we have more things to pull from because life is fluid. There's nothing that it, I mean, everything is so subjective, it's so gray. There's so many different avenues and aspects of things. It's so complex, and that's the beauty of it. But when we only have a hammer, we limit our ability to be able to connect with other skills as well as our own mindset or our own abilities to progress and evolve.
And having an open mind can be so beneficial in, setting down the hammer and picking up new tools.
Absolutely.
I love that.
And even just, yeah. And you mentioned something really, you make a good point, is the open mind. Having an open mind is about letting go of control, right? Because if I have a closed mind and I'm rigid and I'm like, absolutely not, yeah, that's going to impact the way you have interpersonal relationships with yourself, but also others, right? And people can only meet us as far as they've met themselves.
Yeah. I'm hearing a crow in the background in my backyard right now. It's like, hey, change is in the air. Ooh, okay, they're really vocal too. This is not normal right now. Open mind for signs and synchronicities and intuitive hits.
Yes, and changes with the crows in the background being vocal.
And can you tell us a little bit about some of the intuitive hits that you've gotten, whether it be recently or as you've grown and everything? I want to kind of try and help normalize some of this.
So I guess so as a intuitive, educator, one of the things that what happens is we kind of talk about the mundane or the everyday or the human experience and anxiety and depression and all these other symptoms that are byproducts of just not being aligned will for sure come up first. And so when we do that, even for myself, I have to be cognizant of, okay, the first immediate bit of information that I'm getting, if I'm channeling or if I'm just getting input, that's spirit, right? That's universe, that's alignment. Anything outside of that, when I start second guessing myself and I start doing all these other things, that's the human experience. So there's this tug of war. But I guess to kind of answer the question in a little bit more depth, I had this amazing experience with a client. And the client I see for therapy, but she's very woo-woo too. So we do a lot of work like that. It's such a beautiful experience. So I'm trained in EMDR as a clinical therapist, and I'm trained in the attachment and somatic of it as well. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with EMDR,
I am.
but Oh, you are great. So it was beautiful because we're starting to work with some of her like deep-rooted things, and we went into some past life regression healing. And I was blown away as a therapist, as a practitioner on the other end. My client is just like flooded and just like letting go and releasing. It was such a beautiful thing. And I think even if we talk about just kind of intervention and that nothing is of coincidence, timing, readiness, all those things matter, right? For alignment. And sometimes our readiness isn't there. We think we want something and it shows up and we're like, oh, just kidding. I'm not ready yet. So she had happened to be looking for a therapist for like 2 years. And however our paths crossed, she found my Psychology Today. And well, we've only been doing therapy for about 3 months, and it's been a beautiful process, especially when we go into the spiritual healing and the past life stuff and just the reoccurring themes. Because a soul is a soul, it doesn't know time, right? It's the human experience. It's the 3D world stuff.
And speaking of time, like soul, energy, all spirits, they're completely outside of what we feel as time being linear and, each second passing. So when we feel our passed on loved ones, it's them in their now moment.
Yes.
I know so many people, like, they take on the guilt and everything, saying, "Hey, I'm holding you back. I'm so sorry." Can you explain or expand a little more on your experiences with that?
Yeah. So you bring up a really good point. So just to backtrack a little bit about kind of connecting. Sometimes when people come through and I'm picking up information, I see people different areas of their life, right? And it's whatever, right? So once somebody's passed on, they can kind of step into whatever they want to, right? Like maybe they felt their best at 18, so that's how I'm gonna see them is at 18, and so on and so forth. So to kind of circle back and answer your question, like the guilt, and being apologetic, as you said, the soul and the energy doesn't know any concepts of time, but also apologizing and doing all these things from the ego, that doesn't necessarily land with them either, right? Because they're not in the human experience anymore. They're in their organic soul energy form. So kind of doing that, you're exerting this energy, right? Out of a wounded place, out of an unhealed place, out of a, the human experience, fair. But yeah, they for sure hear, they for sure show up, they for sure validate, they for sure are around. And so I guess it's more about, okay, connecting. Where am I operating from? And whether it's with your crossed over ones or anywhere else in your life, where am I operating from? Am I operating from a wounded place? Right? Am I operating from an ego place? Right? What feels aligned? Right? Like you can acknowledge and say, you know what? I miss you. I miss you. You and I feel all the feels and all the emotions, and that's okay too. But I see you. They just want acknowledgement. They just want, hey, just letting you know I'm here, and just a simple hi. But the grieving process and stuff, for sure you can share that with them too. But it kind of does keep you stuck a little bit in a little loop. If we kind of drag it on a little bit, and again, that becomes an emotional block when somebody's trying to connect or whatnot, because that's part of your human experience. They don't want to, like, that's about you and your journey and you coming back to yourself as part of this process. And so once you kind of begin doing more of the healing, they're able to connect in a little bit of a different place, a little bit of a lighter place, and you'll feel the difference, because your energy, your aura is sitting lighter, in any kind of healing.
And just because we get caught in a loop of, emotions and the need to heal and ego traps and everything else, it doesn't mean that they're caught, correct?
Absolutely. Because that's their journey is not on human plane. Their journey is not to live through the human experience anymore. They've crossed over from that. So them in their organic form, not identifying time or any of that, none of these constructs, excuse me, don't necessarily apply to them. So they can come in and they can see and they can assist, but you have to be open to that. You have to be open to that that extra healing, right? Whether it's, and also your spirit guides, right? They're there in support. They can't do things for you, but you can ask, you can connect and say, hey, I need support with XYZ. Same thing with people who've crossed over, right? That energy, that guidance, that shield, that protection. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I know I've smelled flowers and cigar smoke, which was strange, or cigarette smoke, when I've had ancestors come to me when I was first expanding my gifts and everything. So for some reason, the sense of smell was just very common for me.
Yeah, that's usually one of the ones that is pretty commonly developed first, because it's one of the inconspicuous ones, right? Like, we don't really, if we're walking down the street and we get a whiff of, I don't know, ribs cooking or cigarette smoke, we're less likely to be like, stop in our tracks and be like, oh my gosh, what is that? It's, we're a little bit more dismissive of that. So they can be sneaky. Well, I don't want to say sneaky. They can be creative. And so that's one of the ones that actually first, it's most more common that way. And then it's kind of like, okay, maybe Nikki is not, doesn't seem startled by this response. I'm gonna kick it up a little bit a notch, right? Maybe I'm gonna float over a scent that's familiar to Nikki, or maybe I'm gonna float over, I'm gonna move this perfume bottle a little bit. But yeah, they try to desensitize us to their experience so we don't get startled, so it doesn't affect us on the human plane, so it doesn't create more turmoil with the emotional process as we're going through our healing.
Yeah, because we don't want to add a fear response into a healing process if it's not needed.
Absolutely, that'll exacerbate, yes, tons of things.
Yeah, I've had a few people, it's like, hey, I'm starting to sense or smell this, but there's no one around. It's like, am I losing it? I've had clients ask me that, and it's just like, no. Those are your guys reaching out.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, hey.
There's attention to be had. You know, they're trying to connect. So give yourself, you know, some pause in doing that. And I think also, as the life we live, society is so fast paced. I mean, we're always on the go. We always have something to do. And so I think a lot of, like, even these gifts are sitting with them, and the underdevelopment of them, because we all have access, is the discomfort with sitting and being. Because society tells us we have to go faster, we need to hurry, we need to do all these other things that are about the 3D human experience and not about the ego, and about the ego and not alignment, right? Your body does not want you to push it far beyond it needs to. And in fact, that's how we, you know, catch a cold or burned out and all these other things. And so, but we often will dismiss that, right? And like, I'm tired, I'm gonna have a third cup of coffee. I'm, you know, whatever the case may be, right? I can't, you know, I'm not deserving of sit down for 5 minutes because I have other things to do. Yeah, but it's about slowing down. It's about coming back to yourself. It's about listening to your body. Your body will tell you what it needs. Even when we get a cold, right? The body will tell you, hey, it'll tell your brain, hey, my throat hurts. Not the other way around. But we get so stuck in our head that we're so going so fast paced that we're not listening to the body, and we're, you know, like the brain doesn't tell you, oh, throat hurt, right? It's the other way around. And so going off on a little tangent there, but circling it back is we don't give our body as much credit as it deserves. It's an amazing function. It's an amazing source of life. And so coming back to it, being gentle with it, will give us a lot more information, not only about ourselves, but about synchronicities, about intervention, about people who've crossed over, about our own intuitive gifts. Where are we tapping into our senses? Even if we use clinical language, right? One of the grounding techniques would be just tapping into each one of your senses. But what is that? Didn't originate in clinical therapy, right? That's a earth thing. That's a very spiritual thing. Like, let me take a breath. What am I smelling? What am I hearing? What am I thinking? Even walking on barefoot on the grass, you know, it's called grounding clinical therapy, but it's called earthing if we're talking spiritual or nature or any kind of other function. And so that's some of the overlap that I see pretty consistently throughout both fields.
It's awesome that you get to actually blend everything together with your practice for your clients and everything. That's it blows me away. I love it. And finding that harmony between science and spiritual.
Yeah, and I love that because it really does overlap. Like even if we use mindfulness, right? It's talking about sitting with yourself. But what does that mean, right? And it's not just the human body, right? We're being cognizant, we're being mindful, we're being okay. It's not to be mindful is not to sit in the absence of thoughts because that's literally impossible as our brain is a machine that processes that postures that. But it's yeah, I don't know what I think part of the divide is that it's not, scientifically proven, but that's arguable, that's questionable. Like really, because if I can sit across somebody and we can channel somebody who's crossed over, like how do you measure that? Like where does that get credit, right? And even if we go back to, Jungian theory, right? The symbolism, right? And so that's why I bring in the tarot too. So for the folks that are like, well, how does this overlap? Well, Carl Jung was very much about symbolism, subconscious, things that were just synchronicities. So it's very much there. It's just, I think, often dismissed and often just like not accredited. And that's fine. That can be about somebody's readiness or their own cultural or traditional beliefs. But yes, it has been a beautiful journey and one that's affirming. And since I've been kind of openly talking about it and blending it together, I feel myself in more alignment because this is like, no, this feels just right. Because even if I'm a little bit transparent, right, my own work was around, well, what are people going to think? Like, this can be woo woo, this can, but it's no different than anything else that somebody else would bring in whatever, right, Buddhism or any other spiritual connection or theory of religion. So kind of just letting go of my own stuff and doing my own work as I partner with clients has also been serves as a dual healing for both parties. I'm always finding things out about myself and how I can show up better or things that I need to let go as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned people can find you at Psychology Today. I will post that link, but where else can people find you?
Yeah, so my website is currently under construction, but the easiest way to find me would be Instagram, and my handle is at clinically Joanna. Excuse me, it's at clinically underscore Joanna, JOHANNA. Once my website is up and ready for fire, I will upload I will put up a picture and just announce it there.
Excellent, excellent. I will definitely be following you, and I will put the handle and the whole link in the description for the episode as well.
Yay, I'm so excited. I feel so much energy coming in from you. I wish some of that would have got recorded. There was so much, y'all, there was so much energy and so much going on and our guides were mingling and you had to be there. It was a had to be there kind of moment, but such beautiful energy coming from you. Such healing energy.
And same from you, and it's you're
Thank you.
extremely balanced and just so comforting.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Is there anything else that you or your spiritual team would like to discuss?
Yeah, I'm hearing just you be a little bit more gentle and gracious with yourself, that you're doing the best that you can, and that you serve such a beautiful population of people, and you hold and carry and nurture the folks with like open arms, like a big hug. And so keeping in mind for little Nikki and doing the same for you both, on this journey. Give yourself, I'm hearing to give yourself forgiveness. You're pretty hard on yourself, but that it's okay to let go, whatever that means. And I'm also hearing I'm here.
Oh, it feels like somebody's just draped their arms around my shoulders right now.
Oof, I got the chills. Yeah.
And all the feels. Oh my gosh. Those are definitely areas I've been healing for my entire life
Yeah.
and made great strides. But holy cow, all the feels tells me there's still more I have to dig into.
Yeah, and just let go. Yeah, be gentle with yourself. It's riding the ebb and flow, right? So when sadness or anger or happiness even knocks at the door, how much time are you gonna can you allow them in, right? I got 5 minutes, I got 15 minutes, right? And that's fine. Just honoring that when it comes up, giving yourself those few minutes and then taking a deep breath and adulting we go. And that's really the secret in it with any kind of grieving and just kind of managing life. We don't want to repress the thing about emotions is that they demand to be felt and they'll come back one way or another. And yeah, so just honoring them, whatever they are, not judging yourself.
Humans are very emotional beings, and I know oftentimes we get trained into thinking, hey, we have to stay logical, stay in the logic mindset, do, produce, produce, produce. And making the time to rest and feel the feels is daunting, especially for somebody who's always been in the logic, divine masculine mindset.
Yes, exactly. And I think you bring up a really good point. That's something I see in clinical practice a lot is the intellectualizing. So the idea that, oh, I can sit here and talk about all the terms and the descriptions of all the things of the thing that are coming up for me, but oh wait, you want me to sit with some emotion? And then what? No, and then what? Sit with it. And so for sure it's uncomfortable. And I think that just you said, right, being in the divine masculine. And so also meeting that with balance with the divine feminine. Like, okay, what are you needing for me to nourish myself? What are you needing for me to nourish little Nikki? What are you needing for me to just be? And you're right, society does for sure kind of condition us, but also our younger templates, right? If we didn't, we were, we didn't have a safe space to take up space, emotional space, or even to emotion regulate. We take that on. We continue through life with not knowing how to do that, but right, the tools that we have. Some of the inner child work, I'm sorry, I'm kind of like stuttering, but I'm just getting a lot of input from the guides. So some of the inner child work, I think one of my favorite questions to ask clients is if they're like, hey, I want to change. Okay. When you get upset or you feel sad or whatever, right? Whatever your function is. Ask your younger self, what is the purpose of this, right? Maybe you're like, hey, I remember myself 14 years old or at 9 years old. And if you just start shutting down when you start feeling uncomfortable things, okay. Well, what are you needing, right? What is 9-year-old Sally needing at that time? Because we are going to repeat these templates as we continue to go on because their functions, they work, right? They've worked for survival. And so disrupting that a little bit and kind of healing your inner child as you go through will for sure kind of bring in an alignment.
Circling right back to the whole, hey, put down the hammer and pick up some new tools.
And some of the tools that maybe not even be something like a hammer, right? It can be a pillow, it can be a blanket, it can be a warm cup of tea or coffee. It can just be sitting outside with nothing. Just being.
I have something I call a warm hug in a mug, and it'll either be
Oh, I
coffee,
love that.
tea, or cacao. And every morning, well, just about every morning, I'll make at least one, and then I'll share, some of the energy with my guides and just nourish myself as well. It's one of the little rituals I do.
I love that. Yes, a hug in the mug. And then maybe just, bringing in little Nikki, like, hey, we're gonna do this. This is a cheers to you, just some warmthness to you.
Making time to actually rest. That is excellent advice.
Right. And it's like counterintuitive, right? And sometimes that's whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, whether it's rest times, that's something that we talk about. And I do talk with clients like, okay, let's schedule that. And they look at me like I have three heads. I get it. But life is so fast paced that we literally need to, right? Anxiety is a good one, right? If you're kind of spiraling, you're like, I have 100 tabs open in my brain and I just can't complete anything. Okay, schedule an anxiety time. What does that mean? That means you're going to acknowledge that thought. Okay, at Thursday at 8, this week I'm going to acknowledge that. So what you're doing is you're acknowledging the thought like, hey, I'm going to set aside time for you and I'll deal with that then. So what happens is that tab in your mind closes because your brain has to work less to keep it open because it's running in the background, right? So then maybe Thursday at 8, when you have a list of these things, maybe you've been like, oh, some of those things may not even just be as prominent, right? They just wanted some acknowledgement and just like, okay, maybe I didn't need that tab open. So it actually frees up more capacity for you to handle all the days in and day out things that you need to do. And giving yourself some grace. You don't have to have it all together. None of us do. Not you generally, but none of us have it together. There's no race. There's no there really is no race for any regard, right? We're here to do the work, and part of the work is working on ourselves and giving ourselves that unpositive regard, unconditional positive regards, excuse me.
I love that. I just tell everybody, hey, you deserve unconditional love, but the positive regard is a wonderful step for those who don't really feel they deserve that kind of love.
Yes. And that, yeah, that's a hard one, especially, you know, growing up, we internalize these messages, right? And so a lot of messages of unworthy or, you know, things of that nature are pretty deep rooted. And it's interesting, like when we grow up in toxic environments or abusive environments, we grow up and not oftentimes are the children as they grow up or as we grow up, are we mad at our parents or our caregivers, right? But we internalize that we're mad at ourselves. We're hard on ourselves. We're replaying those narratives on ourselves.
Oh yeah. And then we try to rationalize it, and it's like, hey, it served me this long. You know, X, Y, and Z happened to me. It must have happened for a reason, right? And it goes back to, hey, you got to let go of that internalization, because other people do have free will.
Yes. And you bring up a really good point, which reminds me, even if our thought is like, hey, we need to let that go, right? Our nervous system isn't, right? The body literally keeps score. And I think that's some of the beauty about some of the EMDR work. But a dysregulated nervous system will almost always choose a predictable chaos over an uncomfortable peace.
Because it's an unknown.
Yeah, exactly. Because being dysregulated is more comfortable than not. Because being regulated is alarming. Because that tells me fear, safety, survival, like something's wrong. And it'll literally be more dysregulating than just being at a survive, fight or flight.
Oh yeah, for a long time, after I started healing from certain things, I'd always be like, you know, it's like, okay, I'm feeling good. When's the other shoe going to drop? When's this bad thing going to happen? And I'd start overanalyzing everything, looking for the pattern that would lead to it. And it's just like, I'm making a problem. I'm not seeing it. You know, it's not actually there, but I'm turning something that's not into a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And when we don't do some of the work that shows up later on, right? So if we're in an emotionally corrective experience, whether it's a friendship, a partnership, or even with ourselves, we will poke and prod. Because it's like, oh, no, this something is off because there's no chaos. So we'll create it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because there's a lot of people would be like, how can there be comfort in chaos? But it's like, if that's what you're used to, then that's where your comfort zone is.
Exactly, because that you're desensitized to it. So to you, that's comforting, because it keeps you in survival mode. It keeps you in fight or flight. It keeps you kind of on alert to prevent things from happening, right? Because that's you trying to take control of situations that you didn't have control over. But if that's all you grew up and that's all you know, just like the hammer, right? If the hammer is the only tool you've ever had, and somebody else has a screwdriver, you're going to be looking at them like, well, no, a hammer is better, whatever the case may be, because that's all you know until you're like, oh, a screwdriver is a different tool. A mug and a hug and a mug. What did you say?
Warm hug and a mug.
Yeah, a warm hug and a mug. That's a different tool, right? Embracing and just giving yourself grace, that's a different tool. But we will hold on to our tools that we're given with fierceness because they're protective. We feel protected behind them. So even though it sounds like counterintuitive that, well, the chaos is comfort, it makes me feel safer. So I'm gonna stay here.
And you help people get out of that and regulate and balance themselves in so many different ways, using all the tools that you've learned and developed over time.
Yeah, I love that piece. I love the interpersonal piece. I love being like, okay, let's talk about that. And I foster just kind of a non-judgmental like room, right? Or virtual room. And let's talk about that. You know, what's going on? To me, I'm curious by nature. And so I think that it really works. Like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense of that. That's your thought. Yeah, that makes sense. That serves you. It serves a function. So I love exploring that. And I think what it is something that is kind of maybe a misconception is that therapy is like, oh, you go and the therapist gives you all the answers. We just kind of hold up a mirror and we help you just kind of unpack it. And maybe we give you a different perspective, but it really, the beauty is with it's inside, right? And a lot of our processing is when we're speaking about things, we're talking about things. And so it's a beautiful process to hold that mirror for folks on the other side of the screen, and to kind of hear them piece things together. It's a beautiful process.
And you said screen, so you can do your work over Zoom or telephone as well as in person?
Absolutely, absolutely. I do. Yes, I do prefer at least the screen where I can kind of pick up visuals, nonverbals, all these things that I feel are important in the room. But yes.
Awesome. That means you're unlimited of, anywhere that you can help. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Y'all definitely go check her out. I will definitely be posting her links in the description. Joanna, thank you so much for being here today and sharing all of these wonderful experiences.
Thank you for having me. This was such a nice, I love this. I loved your energy. I love everything that you do in your work. And thank you for having me. It really was an honor. And thank you for letting me interact with your energy.
And thank you so much. Thank you for joining me today as we explore what makes us uniquely loved. Be sure to subscribe. More adventure awaits. For more articles and to work with me as your personal guide, go to www.techwitchlayer.com. Always remember, you are accepted. You are valid. You are loved.